Well, I don't support identifying that individual. Again, we need to make sure that we're able to ask the whistleblower questions, questions that the American public deserves to be answered, and the whistleblower should be protected from any form of retaliation. I've been clear and consistent.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode, our North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley speaks with New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of the 21st District. But first, an 82-year-old Catholic priest died in floodwaters in central New York after a night of torrential rain and wind gusts of up to 70 miles per hour. State police last Friday identified the flood victim in Herkimer County as Thomas Connery of Schenectady County. The Diocese of Albany says Connery was a pastor of Immaculate Conception Church in Glenville from 1990 through 2007 and had recently been assigned to two churches in Herkimer County. Troopers say Connery was swept away when he left his car after it got stuck on a flooded road Thursday night. High waters washed out roads around the state and forced scattered evacuations. While New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik says the House-approved impeachment resolution does not open up proceedings to the public. The Republican from New York's 21st District voted against the resolution last week, along with every other Republican in the Democratic-run House. Two Democrats voted against the proposal, and one independent supported it. Stefanik is a member of the House Intelligence Committee, one of the bodies holding impeachment hearings on President Trump. The Republican spoke with WAMC's Pat Bradley on Monday morning about impeachment, fundraising for 2020, and gun laws.
So, obviously, the topic of the day, week, and month when it comes to Congress and Washington is the impeachment inquiry. Last week, you voted against House Resolution 660, which states open and transparent investigative proceedings by the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. And then it sets forth proceedings and procedures. But in your release following the vote, and you cast a no vote, you stated Speaker Pelosi's resolution further empowers Schiff to continue his regime of secrecy from the American public. So why do you believe when this resolution states open and transparent investigative proceedings that this would continue secrecy?
Well, Pat, it's an important question. This has been a broken process from the beginning. As you know, all of the witness testimonies have been conducted behind closed doors. And this week, there are actually 10 closed-door witness testimonies scheduled. In some cases, the witnesses are not going to appear, but the reality is that closed process has continued, and I have long believed that something as important as impeachment needs to be open to the American public. The public should be able to hear and understand the facts rather than reading through cherry-picked leaks coming from the committee. I also believe that the press should have access to all of these witness interviews. The transcripts should absolutely be released. So since that resolution was passed, it's been a continuation of closed-door hearings. No transcripts have been released. And what's concerning about the resolution, first of all, it passed by party-line votes. Democrats were the only supporters. And the no votes included two Democrats who crossed the aisle with Republicans. So it was actually bipartisan no votes. Republicans do not have the ability to issue subpoenas without the sign-off by Adam Schiff. Additionally, Adam Schiff can unilaterally edit the transcripts before they're released to the public. That's not transparency. I believe that, you know, whether you support impeachment or whether you oppose impeachment, the American people deserve all of the facts. They shouldn't have to view these cherry-picked opinions from what Adam Schiff is releasing. So this is not transparent, as we're seeing this week when the closed-door witness interviews are continuing.
So why vote no on a resolution that would open that up?
Well, the fact of the matter is the resolution passed the House and there have been no changes. It still allows Adam Schiff to continue conducting these witness interviews in private without the American public's ability to see. It doesn't include full transparency. Even today, unless you sit on the House Intelligence Committee, Foreign Affairs, or the Oversight Committee, members of Congress don't have access to any of the transcripts. So it hasn't been transparent. This has been a broken process from the beginning. If we really want to have have a transparent, fair process. You would allow Republicans to issue subpoenas. You would also allow the president's counsel to be a part of this process, as they have been historically in any impeachment proceedings.
Elise Stefanik, some people have compared the House proceedings, though, and the closed-door sessions in particular. They've compared those to grand juries, which decide behind closed doors if evidence warrants continuing to trial. And behind closed doors right now, there are Republicans on those committees. So what's the problem?
The problem is, and I've sat in on many of these, on most of these witness interviews, I've asked questions at a number of these witness interviews, and what's being portrayed in the media is not the full story. It's cherry-picked excerpts, and I believe that transparency and sunlight is critical to our democratic republic. It's critical to good governance, and something as serious as impeachment, we should shine sunlight on it so the American people can have access and have their questions answered. I think that's really important to get all of the facts out there. Again, historically, if you look at both the Nixon and Clinton impeachment proceedings, the president's counsel has been able to participate in all witness interviews. That has not been the case for a single witness interview. You don't allow one committee chair unilaterally to have so much power, particularly when it's not on the Judiciary Committee, which has oversight when it comes to impeachment. This is being done in the Intelligence Committee, which does not have oversight over impeachment proceedings.
So from the start, how would you have wanted the process to move forward? Because you've said from the beginning that the process is broken. How should it have started? And, you know, what should it have been doing?
Well, first, I believe that Republicans should have had the ability to invite witnesses and issue subpoenas. We have not had that ability without getting signed off by Adam Schiff. Number two, transparency. Transcripts should have been released to the American public. These are not classified interviews, Pat. They say at the beginning of every single interview, this is not classified. So it's not a classification issue that's leading us from releasing it. It's Adam Schiff unilaterally making the decision to withhold that information from the American public. Instead, the media is now forced to listen to leaks and forced to listen to opinions from Democratic members of what their portrayal, what they believe the witnesses are saying. And it isn't based in facts, and that is going to come out when the transcripts are released. So we absolutely, this should have been a fair process from the beginning, open, public, and all the transcripts released for every member of Congress and every American to have access to them.
Elise Stefanik, playing devil's advocate for a moment here, the Democrats will say it needs to be closed at least initially to protect those who are testifying and make sure that they are telling the truth. Do you believe that?
Well, all witnesses, they take an oath before they answer questions, and it is a serious crime to lie to Congress. So the witnesses do have to tell the truth. That's the case in open or closed settings. And I believe that open settings with something as important as this, they should be an open forum so that the American people have an opportunity and the media has an opportunity to have access to all of the facts. You, as a member of the press, have not had access to a single transcript. That's not acceptable in our country. You, as a member of the press, have not had access to a single witness interview. That's not acceptable in this country. So they should have been open to the press and open to the public.
One of the other issues, and I know that President Trump has tweeted about this, is whether any whistleblower should be identified. Do you agree with the president that the ID of anybody who's testifying, particularly the whistleblowers, should be identified?
Well, first, the whistleblower is protected from retaliation. I support protections for all whistleblowers when it comes to retaliation. That's in statute. That's by law. And there should be no retaliation because we want to make sure that in any agency, whistleblowers do come forward. In this case, because these impeachment proceedings began with the whistleblower's report to the inspector general, I believe the whistleblower should testify. I believe believe there are important questions to ask of the whistleblower, because one of my concerns is the whistleblower had no direct knowledge of the phone call, which was then released to the American public by the president. This would be the phone call between President Trump and President Zelensky of the Ukraine. So, of course, the whistleblower should be protected from any form of retaliation, but at the same time, the whistleblower should answer questions from members in both parties.
But should that person be identified to the public?
Well, I don't support identifying that individual. Again, we need to make sure that we're able to ask the whistleblower questions, questions that the American public deserves to be answered, and the whistleblower should be protected from any form of retaliation. I've been clear and consistent on that issue.
Elise Stefanik, you mentioned earlier, and I think most people know, that the vote last week on the House resolution to open the investigative proceedings followed partisan lines, as you mentioned, except for two Democrats. In many of the impeachment proceedings that are going on, are you and other Republicans simply following partisan lines and doing what President Trump wants you to do?
Well, listen, I have one of the most independent records in Congress. I follow the facts, particularly of something as important as impeachment, and I've been an active participant, attending the majority of the witness testimonies, asking questions in some of the interviews, and I believe that the facts are support my position, which is I do not believe the president has committed impeachable offenses. I believe that many, many people oppose President Trump's policies and have opposed his policies since after he was elected. And I think this is a part of that strategy to undermine the president from the left. I mean, this is a very clear choice in this district. I voted no on the impeachment resolution. My opponent said she would have voted yes. This is a clear choice. And voters should have, I'm glad voters are able to know that as we gear up to head into 2020.
How do you think the impeachment hearings will change once the public gets a chance to see them?
Well, first, I think it's too late. I think the fact that we have had, we'll probably have had over 20 closed-door witness testimonies. It's been a broken process from the start. My concern is that all of the information, all of the witness testimonies, when they are finally released to the public, Adam Schiff is allowed to unilaterally redact portions of the testimony. That is unacceptable. Transparency means 100% transparency. So I believe that, unfortunately, the process has been broken from the beginning. What will happen, though, is the Judiciary Committee will then take the lead. From my perspective, it should have always been the Judiciary Committee, because that's the committee that has oversight over impeachment proceedings, not the Intelligence Committee. But this was a decision by Speaker Pelosi to further empower Adam Schiff. And that, from my perspective, was a very, very big and strategic mistake, because he has shown an abuse of power in that position, limiting access for other members of Congress who do not sit on the committees of jurisdiction, and really running a partisan process.
Congresswoman Stefanik, if I could bring it a little bit more towards the state and a little bit more election-wise. Campaign finance reports came out recently, and there's been several analyses of yours done pointing to the number of out-of-state and PAC donations. Couple questions on that. Why do you get so much from outside New York? And do you think, based on the way some of the articles have been written about that, could it be detrimental from a voter's perspective?
Well, you know, this is something that my opponents have consistently attacked me on, but I think my electoral outcomes and winning by some of the largest margins in the Northeast shows that voters understand I'm focused on delivering bipartisan results. I have very strong support across the district. I have donors from each of the 12 counties in the district, and I'm proud of every single donor. I'm also proud of donors across the country who are looking to new voices and new generations of leadership, particularly Republicans Republican women. So I'm honored to earn that support, and voters in this district know that every day I'm working hard on their behalf, on behalf of New York's 21st Congressional District, making sure that our district has a seat at the table on every important national issue. So I'm proud of the campaign, and I'm proud how we continue to outraise my opponent. We will continue to do that, and we will continue to win Republicans, Democrats, and Independents as we head towards 2020.
And a mostly non-election question, although the issue of guns always somehow gets tied up into elections. At the end of October, you were among 90 congressional representatives that filed an amicus brief arguing that a Massachusetts ban on the sale of certain types of guns violates the Second Amendment. And in the press release, you said that the case could be a precedent for overturning New York's SAFE Act. Can you explain how that could work and what the implications are for the future in New York State?
Absolutely. So I believe the New York SAFE Act is unconstitutional. I believe it's an infringement on our Second Amendment rights, and this is an issue that many, many, many of my voters care deeply about. I represent tens of thousands of law-abiding gun owners, and this is potential precedent for challenging of the constitutionality of the New York SAFE Act, which I know is still being pursued. So, you know, as someone who has a strong record of standing up for Second Amendment rights, in opposition to my opponent who supports banning guns, this is a clear choice going into 2020. So I am proud to sign on to that amicus brief, and we've gotten very positive feedback from across the district.
Several states have banned certain types of guns or attachments to guns. Why not ban some of the more problematic firearms?
Well, Pat, I mean, the definition, you just used a very general term. Details are incredibly important. Again, automatic weapons in this country are illegal. I represent, as I said, tens of thousands of law-abiding gun owners, and their constitutional rights deserve to be protected. I will continue standing up for our Second Amendment rights.
Elise Stefanik, thank you. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Pat, for the opportunity, and thanks for allowing me to share my perspective with your listeners.
Well, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Thank you for listening. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.